Radio Prague News.
The Czech Foreign Minister has said a further 10 million crowns should be cleared for earthquake-hit Haiti and added that long-term aid should also be a priority. The Czech charity People in Need has said its most experienced aid coordinator should arrive in Haiti on Sunday. And more snowfall and high winds have complicated travel across the Czech Republic. Czech Foreign Minister Jan Kahout has said on Sunday that Czech aid for earthquake-struck Haiti should be long-term. He said aid should continue to flow in the coming weeks, months and years once the media images have disappeared. The government is due to meet on Monday to discuss a further 10 million crowns in emergency aid from the Foreign Ministry Emergencies Budget. So far, the ministry has released 5 million crowns in emergency aid aimed at restoring supplies of drinking water. Minister of Defence Martin Bartak said it was prepared to send Czech field hospitals and specialists and even military police to help keep order in the country if necessary. Media reports have said heavily armed gangs have returned to the capital, Port-au-Prince. Mr. Bartak said discussions with aid coordinators are continuing over what other aid could be sent. The People in Need charity said its most experienced aid coordinator should arrive in earthquake-hit Haiti on Sunday. The charity is working there in partnership with the Irish charity Concern. In a statement released on Sunday, People in Need warned of the threat of increasing unrest in the stricken Caribbean country. An appeal for donations by the Czech charity has so far raised around 6 million crowns. Fresh snowfalls and high winds have created problems across the country on Sunday. Up to 4 centimetres of snow fell overnight, with up to 10 centimetres more expected during the day. The situation has been complicated by high winds of up to 130 kilometres an hour, which has led to snowdrifts in some parts. One of the worst affected regions is Vysočina, where some smaller roads are impassable. The state forestry company has also banned visitors to forests in some localities because of the danger of falling trees. Czech ice hockey star Patrik Eliáš is undergoing further tests after he had to be stretchered from Saturday's National Hockey League game for the New Jersey Devils. Eliáš remained on the ice for around 5 minutes after a hard hit in the second period and was apparently temporarily unconscious. Hospital examinations showed no serious injury, but the Devils manager said further tests would be carried out with the likelihood that Eliáš will have to take a pause from the sport. Eliáš was named captain of the Czech team to compete in the upcoming Winter Olympics in Vancouver. Snowfalls are expected to continue on Sunday with maximum temperatures of around zero. Snow will continue to fall throughout the start of the week, with daytime temperatures descending to a -3 degrees Celsius. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
Hello and welcome to Weekend Programming here on Radio Prague. I'm Jan Wellinger. Here's a taste of some of the things you'll hear in today's show. We begin, as always, with another edition of Mailbox hosted by Pavla Horákova. She'll be answering your emails and letters, and she'll have some good news. Radio Prague is, after all, staying on shortwave. That'll be followed by a letter from Prague in which our reporter Chris Johnstone will look at, well, what it's like to get around in the Czech Republic. And then be sure to stay tuned for this edition of Czech Books. David Vaughan will be looking at the English language translation of the Czech book Money from Hitler, Peníze od Hitlera, very emotional stuff. So you'd be very well advised to stay for the second part of the program. It's not to be missed. Now, though, we get to your letters and your questions, and we get to that good news, as I said at the beginning, that Radio Prague is staying on shortwave. Here's Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to Mailbox, Radio Prague's weekly program that answers your questions and queries and responds to your comments. If you follow Radio Prague closely, you will know that the end of last year brought a huge question mark over the future of our shortwave service. Many of our listeners the world over are still writing in to ask about new developments in the matter. Among the most recent letters is this one from Mogire Machuki from Kenya.
I am one of the listeners worried about Radio Prague's move to close its international shortwave broadcasts. A few years back, Radio Vlaanderen International came up with that exact idea, and after a few months on air, they eventually closed down their overseas signal completely. And now it's Radio Prague. What is up, our dear friends at Radio Prague? You are our only link to Prague's diverse cultures and lifestyles. We need you. I, for one, understand that the internet is becoming a challenge to shortwave broadcasts like FM broadcasts and the latest mobile phone technologies. However, we, the enthusiastic DXers, still value shortwave transmissions very much. I hope we will be together for the next many calendar months.
On a similar note, Yvonne and Gervin Roberts from Wales sent us this message.
Happy New Year to all of the staff at Radio Prague. We are two faithful listeners in Wales. Please give us a New Year present by stating that the broadcasts of Radio Prague are now safe. It is because of your station that we have been regular visitors to the Czech Republic. Please tell your president and the government that we need Radio Prague to continue.
And Dmitry Mazin from Russia writes,
shortwave is the only reliable way to listen and to know more about foreign cultures. Slow internet does not permit comfortable listening due to the long pauses.
Once again, thank you, all of you who have written in the last few months, so much for expressing your support. As we announced several times, our shortwave broadcasts are to continue according to the current schedule until the end of January. Radio Prague's management is now working on a new schedule starting on February the 1st. But the great news is that Radio Prague will keep its shortwave broadcasts. There will be a certain reduction, but it will not be substantial, and the majority of our listeners should not be affected by it. Radio Prague will need to find other ways to save and make ends meet with the slimmer budget for 2010. This is the result of intensive negotiations between Czech Radio and the Foreign Ministry, and we hope this is good news for you just as it is for us here at Radio Prague. And we still have a little time for this question from our listener Dibyendu Madhab Das from West Bengal.
When was the Prague University established?
Prague's Charles University was founded by the Holy Roman Emperor Charles IV in 1347, and it is one of the oldest universities in Europe. From its very beginnings, it was a multinational institution, providing education to students from what today are the Czech Republic, Poland, Germany, Hungary, Austria, and even Denmark and Sweden. Ethnic Czechs apparently accounted for only under 20% of all students at the beginning. At the end of the 19th century, the institution was divided into a Czech and a German part, the latter then being abolished after the end of World War II. Currently, Charles University has 17 faculties, from arts and humanities to theology. Yet our January mystery woman, gifted and accomplished as she was, would not have been allowed to study at the Prague University, as the first female students were accepted there as late as 1897. This month, our mystery person is the English Renaissance poetess who came to Prague with her alchemist stepfather. She's said to have been fluent in Czech, English, German, Italian, and Latin, which is also the language in which she wrote her poetry. She died in childbirth at the age of just 31 in Prague, where she is buried. If you think you know who our mystery lady was, please send us your answers to english@radio.cz or Radio Prague 12099 Prague by the end of January, and maybe you will be lucky to win a Radio Prague goodie bag. In the meantime, please keep those emails coming, and Mailbox will be back again in a week's time. Bye-bye.
Pavla Horáková with that edition of Mailbox, and keep those questions coming and comments. We are always very happy to hear from you here at the station. I'll just run some addresses by you where you can write to us, and the easiest, of course, is the one over the internet. It is english@radio.cz. However, if you're the old-fashioned type and you'd like to send us something through snail mail instead, well, you can do that too. Our address is Vinohradská 12, 12099. Prague to the Czech Republic. And if you do send a postcard, well, send us something which is maybe typical of the place where you live, where you're from. We're always happy to hear from our listeners. Moving on now, though, a letter of a different kind, and that's a letter by our reporter, Chris Johnstone. Letter from Prague.
I must admit I'm somewhat in two minds about my girlfriend's Christmas present to herself, a global positioning systems device. It is not that I can find too much fault with the device itself, although on a recent trip to the site of a former Batya factory in England, it did tell us to steer straight ahead when there was only a brick wall in front. I learnt later that the system is only accurate to about 10 meters and gets a bit confused when it comes down to the more detailed instructions. No, the real concern is that the device threatens to put me out of a job. After a series of rows when I took the wheel and my girlfriend navigated, and vice versa, an unspoken agreement resulted that I would read the maps and she would do the driving. While cautious, my driving is flawed by a failing to read or understand all the road signs and an inability to see well in the dark. I also like maps, and in the past scoured Czech bazaars and junk shops to lay my hands on choice specimens that reflected the changing historical landscape. On the face of it, such fascination might appear to be misplaced. Generally, the shape of the Czech Republic has been pretty consistent over the last few hundred years. I would point out, however, the subtle changes that these paper treasures conveyed. The creation of Czechoslovakia in the first place, Munich and the dismemberment and annexation that followed, Czechoslovakia back on the map after World War II, albeit without Subcarpathian Russia gifted to Stalin, the disappearance of German place names following their expulsion, and the latter addition of the socialist adjective and disappearance of villages along the Cold War border. I could continue. It was the disappearance of those German names that probably perversely sparked some deeper interest in maps of the Czech lands a few decades ago. I remember history books at university referring to some significant event or place using the German name, which I then desperately tried to find in a modern atlas. Surprise, surprise, these only carried the Czech replacement name. This was a long time before the internet did away with such painstaking problems. Prince Metternich, the Habsburg foreign minister who stamped his mark on Europe after the Battle of Waterloo, was one criminal in this respect. His family seat at Lasne Kinswart in western Bohemia was usually described under its German name, Bad Königswart. The place cropped up frequently in the history books. This was because Metternich's love of his country estate meant that he was often out of the loop when historic events were taking place on the continent, and his services were quickly required in Vienna to clog up a liquid situation. There is another factor as well. Apparently those interwar Czechoslovak maps were world beaters when it came to accuracy. That news came from a team of latter-day mapmakers who were charting the country near my country home one winter. After planting lots of red-tipped sticks in the frozen ground, they came knocking on the door to ask if they could buy a midday meal, because there was nothing else nearby. My girlfriend happily emptied the cupboards and a meal for six was soon on the table. These latter-day mapmakers admitted they did not usually get such a welcome. Indeed, they are often spurned and seen as troublemakers. Their measurements often mean that boundaries have to be withdrawn and neighbour is set against neighbour in their wake. Meanwhile, my own maps, some of them those state-of-the-art versions, are still stacked up and have not been married to the picture frames bought in the same bazaars that were supposed to display them. Perhaps I should look on the bright side. While front-seat navigators look like they have been made redundant, at least the physical maps themselves look like they are becoming real collectibles.
Chris Johnstone there on what it's like getting around in the Czech Republic. That brings us to our final feature for this day, Czech Books, hosted by David Vaughan. He looks at the English language translation of a Czech book called Money from Hitler, or Peníze od Hitlera.
The novel Peníze od Hitlera, Money from Hitler, is one of the best Czech books I've read for a long time. And luckily for English-speaking readers, it has just been published in an excellent English translation by Women's Press in Toronto. When it first appeared in Czech over 3 years ago, Money from Hitler caused quite a stir. It won the prestigious Magnesia Litera Award, but Czech critics remained divided. Perhaps this is no surprise. The author, 41-year-old Radka Denemarková, chose one of the most sensitive and painful episodes of modern Czech history as her starting point, a subject that for many remains taboo to this day. Her book goes back to the days just after the end of the Second World War, when tens of thousands of Czechoslovakia's German speakers were being rounded up and expelled from the country. It is no secret that the expulsions, especially in these early stages, were often accompanied by acts of violence, sometimes quite indiscriminate. In her novel, Radka Denemarková literally pulls these events out from the topsoil of the recent past, as we see in the vivid opening chapter, when a small boy digs up a rather unusual object in his parents' orchard with his little green spade. Here is an extract.
When he is finished, he's out of breath. On the ground in front of him lies some sort of bowl, which is strikingly long and narrow, and has strange bits sticking out of it, and rough cracks and holes. A white bowl. He picks it up and cleans it, removing all remnants of dirt. Then he rinses the object with a child's watering can, also green with a red sprinkler spout. Only twice and briefly does he walk away to fill the can with dirty rainwater from a rusty old tub set down years ago by the strawberry plot so that Dennis could paddle in it in summer. Now that the hole-ridden bowl has been emptied out and cleaned, he turns it round and round before lifting it up. He is surprised to see two hollows, eye sockets. It is a skull. A human skull. With care, 5-year-old Dennis carries it from the orchard to the sandpit.
When I met Radka Denemarková to talk about Money from Hitler, I couldn't resist asking her to tell me more about this gruesome opening scene, which, at once grotesque and hyper-realistic, vividly sets the tone for the novel, described by one reviewer as an existential detective story.
Můžu říct jenom, že jsem tu knihu nejdřív psala takovým filozofujícím stylem a pak jsem si říkala, že ne.
I first started writing the book in a kind of philosophical style, but then I said, no, I don't want to risk being boring as I write about serious, difficult subjects. I have to make it readable, pushing my ideas into the background and wrapping them up in a story that has tension, in this case, almost like a detective story. It starts with the discovery of a skull, so you would expect it to be revealed by the end who the skull belonged to and what happened to that person. But I try to make everything uncertain, so I hope that even at the end the reader isn't quite sure whose skull it is. In a sense, it's also playing with what I'm trying to do in the book, as I'm sticking my fingers into the wounds of Czech or Central European history, just like Dennis when he sticks his fingers into the ground and digs up a skull, playing with it in the sandpit.
Kde si hrál a kde vykopal na začátku lebku, s kterou potom si hraje na pískovišti.
Radka Denemarková talks about her work with passion. Her writing is a great deal more than just a sophisticated intellectual exercise. Even before the story begins, the author turns a traditional disclaimer about any similarity with real events or people being pure coincidence on its head, stating on the opening page, "All these stories happened," with the added comment, "I've never known why." And this is typical for her approach to recent history. She argues that we bear full responsibility for our past, and even for the acts of our parents and grandparents. Denemarková outlines the plot of the novel, which tells a story which, tragically, has plenty of well-documented parallels in real historical events.
Ita Laušmanová, hlavní hrdinka té knihy, která se tam objevuje ve věku 6 let, 16 let.
The main hero, Gita Laušmanová, appears at the age of 6, at 16, and then in her old age. I follow her life from birth to death to show all that can happen. She is born in Bohemia into a German-speaking Jewish family, only finding out she is Jewish when she is sent to a concentration camp. At the end of the war, she is the only survivor from her family. She wants to come back to her village, but discovers she has nowhere to return to. She finds out that the so-called Red Guards have confiscated all the family property because they labeled all German-speaking inhabitants as Nazis. All her life, she is trying to return. She comes back 60 years later, offering reconciliation and suggesting that a monument be erected to her father's memory. but she finds that she is still just as unwelcome. We often hear the cliché that hope lies in children and the young, but that's not how it is, because children are brought up by their parents, who pass down all their prejudices. Everything is passed down from generation to generation.
Všechny ty věci, které vlastně se tak z generace na generaci předávají dodnes.
At the core of the story is the terrifying episode when the young Gita Laushmanova returns, weak and emaciated from the camp, but is driven out of her own village by her Czech neighbours, who have taken over her family's old estate. Here is a brief extract at the moment when she first walks into what had been her family's dining room, an unwanted ghost from the past.
Someone is standing there, but it isn't mother, or our cook, nor is it my sister. It's a strange woman, a young, startled woman with a bulging belly. In an apron, she's using our ladle to serve a man hot lentil soup thickened with beans and peeled barley. The dish is from our white dining service with a blue flower pattern, a pattern my mother designed for the Vienna porcelain factory. All three of us stiffen. The man wipes his mouth nervously with the back of his hand. What are you doing here? Don't you know how to knock? Knock? Why should I knock? Once again the tears spring, but I gulp them back as they scramble for the starting line, using my vocal cords to rein them in. I live here. I'm Gita. Gita Laushmanova.
The 16-year-old Gita is forced to leave, her very life in danger, but she proves immensely tough. In 2005, by now nearly 80, she returns again, armed with documents proving that her family's property was wrongly confiscated and by rights belongs to her. She meets the people of the village, all of whom are only too aware of the injustice of all those years before. She's offering reconciliation, but the villagers are so blinded by their own paranoia that they fail even to recognize the gesture. In these scenes, Dena Markova deliberately stretches the narration beyond the limits of realism, painting a picture of the villagers as a vividly grotesque and shriveled version of the chorus in classical drama. Narrated in part from the perspective of Gita herself, one of these meetings with the village council culminates in a spectacular and unexpected event worthy of Edgar Allan Poe. The stigmata, the marks of the cross, appear on Gita's hands. One of those present is Dennis, the child with the skull in the opening chapter, these days a successful pathologist. Here is a short extract from that scene.
Unable to hide his professional fascination, Dennis gasps, "Stigmata?" He wants to look at the wound out of which the thin stream of blood flowed. I chuckle, "Yes, of course. What else would you expect, doctor? The blood that flowed from my parents, from Rosalie, from my brother Adolf, from Rudolf, my little boy. All that blood was pumped into my heart, into my arteries and veins and capillaries. There are times when I need to let it out. Before your lying faces and the garbage-strewn cuckoo's nest of Puklice are flushed away in a great bloody splat, once and for all, to hell."
With her focused anger and her refusal to let the dust settle on the past, Gita Laushmanova is the unquestioned hero of the novel, a woman who will not give up fighting to make others face the truth, in this case the fact that they brazenly stole the property of her family. The novelist makes no secret of the fact that she identifies closely with Gita's struggle.
No to se musí. To se opravdu musí, protože když se to, když se to vrací...
We have to confront the past, otherwise it will come back to haunt us. It's like with the individual. If you shut things out, they can come back in ways that are unexpected and brutal. If you put the past under the carpet, it festers and ends up poisoning more and more people. You have to look into what really happened. I have to keep asking because I wasn't born in Australia or England, but here in Bohemia, in Central Europe, where various things mixed together and various things happened. These things in some way influenced our culture, the behavior of people, of politicians, and also my own life.
Money from Hitler may sound like a very political novel, but in fact it is very much more than that, and is certainly not just a platform for discussing the traumas of Czech-German-Jewish relations. Its plot and language are far more subtle. Radka Denemarkova relishes the richness of language without forcing its symbolism or associations down the reader's throat. I'll leave her with the last word.
To jsou tam věci, které zase mě těší. Já tam mám různý třeba aluze nebo na svý autory, který mám ráda.
I really enjoy putting in allusions to authors I like, and there are also plenty of biblical references, as if it were a book about a martyr, but in fact she's a kind of grotesque martyr. It's a way of working with language and with a cultural background you have, but I don't want to make it stand out. I like it when the reader has the choice to take it or leave it. I like writing for a variety of different readers, with each being able to find something.
And before we go, I'll remind you again that Radka Denemarkova's novel Money from Hitler is published by Women's Press in Toronto.
You've been listening to Czech Books here on Radio Prague, hosted by David Vaughan. I'm Jan Vellinger. For all of us here at the station, we want to thank you so much for joining us, and do so again soon.